Hi, I'm Taylor.
Hi, I'm Jenny.
Are you into ghosts, aliens, or murder? It's okay if you do, because we love terrible things too.
It's why we started our podcast, A Little Bit Grim.
We talk about the paranormal,
true crime,
folklore,
cults,
conspiracies,
some disasters,
and every other heinous thing that could possibly happen to a person.
It's a little bit spooky.
It's a little bit funny.
And it's a little bit grim.
And you can find us wherever you like to stream your podcasts.
And find us on your favorite social media platforms.
We'll see you there. Goodbye.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jeanette.
And I am Emily.
And wow, look at us. Recording.
Look at us. Okay, so really quickly, I have to apologize for how I sound today. I had my second vaccine yesterday, and I'm not doing too hot today.
Woohoo! So, she's fully vaccinated!
I am, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we both said exciting at the same time.
It's okay.
I'm sorry you feel bad. I haven't my second dose yet, so, like, I don't know how... Did you get sick with your first dose?
No, my arm just hurt.
Huh.
Yeah, this one.
A lot of
wasn't...
people who. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I know a lot of people who got like headaches and stuff during the first one, but like I didn't even have a sore arm. Like I don't know. So I'm trying to think of how the second dose will affect me, but I honestly don't know.
When are you getting the second dose?
Not this coming Monday, but the next one.
Okay.
Yeah, I still got like a week or so.
Gotcha. Well, you have time to prepare yourself.
Yeah, exactly. If anything, I'll just get to call into work.
That's true. Since I ended up leaving early yesterday, I was like, I have to stay. I can't leave early through the shift. So, yeah.
Oh, so you worked through it too?
It wasn't that bad. I just felt like really tired.
Right. Oh.
It's all good.
Good day for you.
I know. So really quickly, we are not going to have an episode next week. More than likely.
Yeah, Emily is getting her surgery done.
I am. I'm very excited. So
excited to get it over with, yes.
Excited to get it over with, yes. So our next episode will likely be the 27th of May. Yeah.
I will also be where you are, Emily, mm-hmm. On that weekend, so we could possibly record together in person.
That would be wonderful.
I know! I'm excited.
Me too. Oof. All right. So, I don't
you
think
can
we
just
have
hear
any...
the sleepiness in your voice. Like,
oh,
from
no.
The shot.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. But...
Well, I don't think we have any other news, really.
That is very true. I feel like we recorded recently. Oh my gosh, big news! It was Emily's birthday yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty much it.
Now we're feeling 22.
We are.
Both
that
of
is
us.
True.
Mm-hmm. Together. Mm-hmm.
Both of us, yes.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Well... Let's get into the story because I have nothing else that I need to say.
Me neither.
All right. So, today we are going to be talking about Terry Peter Rasmussen. Also, I don't know if his middle name is Petter or Peter, so we're just going to go with it because it's P-E-D-E-R. So I would think Peter, like a really strange version of Peter. But right. I'm not too sure. So, he was an American serial killer. He killed at least 6 people. And he is also known as the chameleon killer because he would use different aliases to get closer to people.
Oh, wow.
So, I hope you're ready to be terrified about anyone in your close personal life.
Oh, my God. That's not nice.
So,
Emily, that's including you. Do you want me to be afraid of you?
No, because I'm the one telling you about this. If I wanted you to be, if I was like this, why would I tell you a story? Yeah,
you
like
wouldn't give me
that?
Information about it. Okay.
Unless that's super psychopathic.
I don't know, man. Sometimes that goes deep.
That's true. That's true. That would be, yeah, that would be really bad. Okay. No, sociopath. That's what it would be. It would be very
there we
sociopath.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, he was born on December 23rd in Denver, Colorado. So, he ended up growing up in Arizona, and he attended North High School in Phoenix until dropping out during his sophomore year in 1960. He then enlisted in the United States Navy in 1961, and he served until he was discharged in 1967. He got married in 1969 and had four children and lived with his family in Phoenix and Redwood City, California. So, his wife ended up leaving him and taking the children in 1975 after he was arrested for aggravated assault. And they last saw him on December of 1975 or 1976 when he showed up with an unidentified woman, and the divorce was finalized in 1978. So he lived in a number of different states, and this did include Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, Virginia, Texas, Ohio, Oregon, Hawaii, and California. And he ended up settling in New Hampshire sometime in the late 1970s. It was reported that he was known to travel with women and children, and he often worked as an electrician for oil and gas companies. While living in Manchester, New Hampshire, he lived under the alias Robert Bob Evans and worked at the Wambach Mill. And throughout 1980, he was arrested in Manchester three times for writing a bad check, theft, and diverting electric current. So we're off to a really good start with this guy.
Yeah, wow.
That's just okay. A little bit of information. Actually, that was not a little bit. That was a lot of information, like about his past. So, yeah, that was kind of a lot. Do you have any comments on that? Because I kind of sped through that.
No, I think I'm good.
All right, fantastic. Oh, by the way, in the middle of the podcast, Jeanette might start sounding like a robot, and we're just going to have to tackle that when it comes to it.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what's happening, but for some reason, every now and then I'll sound like a robot. So, yeah, if you hear that, just don't say anything.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
awesome.
We'll just move on.
We will just move on. Yes. So in 1978, Terry, I almost called him Peter because I had spent so much time talking about the name Peter. He was dating Marlise Elizabeth Honeychurch, and Honeychurch was last seen in California on Thanksgiving, the day that year. And after an argument with her family, she left him and her two daughters, 6-year-old Marie Elizabeth Vaughn and 1-year-old Sarah Lynn McWaters. So, sorry.
You're good?
So, in November of 1985, the bodies of Honeychurch and Vaughn were found in a barrel in the Bear Brook State Park in Allenstown, New Hampshire. They were found to have died of blunt force trauma to their heads, and a second barrel was found about 100 yards away from the first one in 2000, containing the body of McWaters and an unidentified child aged between the ages of 2 and 4 years old. The identity of Honeychurch and her two children were not known until they were confirmed by DNA profiling in 2019. And as of June 2019, the third child does remain unidentified, but the authorities were able to confirm that Terry was her biological father. So we unfortunately know nothing about them, which is really sad.
Aww.
So, they were found in 1985. Computer, we are not restarting right now. I'm kind of doing something. Thank you for asking. So, November 10th, 1985, a hunter found a metal 55-gallon drum near the site of a burned-down store at Bear Brook State Park in Allenstown, New Hampshire. And inside were the bodies of a young, of an adult female and a young girl, both wrapped in plastic. They were buried in Allenstown Cemetery with a tombstone that read, "Here lies the mortal the mortal remains known only to God of a woman aged 23 to 33 and a girl aged 8 to 10. Their slain bodies were found on November 10, 1985 in a Bear Brook State Park. May their souls find peace in God's loving care. And then it was May 9th that the other two remains were found, and they were also in a metal 55-gallon drum. And the police do believe that all four murders occurred roughly at the same time. So, however, the investigators, they could like not find that second drum in 1985. So it seems like they all died about the same time, but that metal drum wasn't there whenever the initial bodies were found.
Right.
So the cause of death as well was blunt force trauma.
Mm.
Sorry, I'm like, my voice is so tired.
No, it's okay.
Ugh. So as you know, the adult later was identified to be Honeychurch. And she had possible Native American ancestry. So her age at the time of death was estimated to be 23 to 33. And she had curly or wavy brown hair and was between 5'2" and 5'7". And the girls were also thought to have some Native American heritage, and they also had light or European complexions. So the girl that was found later, Dawn, she was between the ages of 5 to 11, and she had had symptoms of pneumonia and a crooked front tooth and diastema, which is the space between her two front teeth. And there were earrings in each of her ears, and she was somewhere between 4'3" tall or 4'6" tall. So the middle child is still unidentified as well. And then the youngest girl was identified to be McWaters, who is estimated to be 1 to 3 years old. And she also had the gap between her front teeth, which, you know, is a hereditary trait.
Yeah.
So that's how you're able to also tell that they were all related.
Oh.
I feel like I'm going very fast. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But as, you know, we spoke about, this was something that the DNA testing just discovered, like, who they were in, like, 2019. Goodness gracious. Which is, that's a very big difference, Emily. Which is incredible. Like, I know that we've had a few stories before where people were discovered just because of, like, their sock.
Right.
It's incredible, honestly.
No, it is.
So while he was using the pseudonym of Bob Evans, Terry dated Benice Bowden, who disappeared from Manchester, New Hampshire after Thanksgiving of 1981, as well as her six-month-old child. Authorities believed that he killed her somewhere in California, although her body has never been found. She was not reported missing at the time, as her family believed that she had left town due to financial reasons. So throughout the early 1800s, he had possession of her daughter, whom he called Lisa, and he posed as her father. So he killed her mother and then was like, well, looks like I am your father now, and just kind of...
What the heck? That is creepy.
Yeah. It really is.
Ew, I don't like that.
I don't either. It's really gross. So he was living in Cypress, California in 1985 under the name Curtis Kimball when the charges of driving under the influence and endangering the welfare of a child, and then he failed to appear in court for that. So far he has had three different aliases. He has had Terry Rasmussen, which is him, Bob Evans, and Curtis Kimball. So then, after he failed to appear in court, he decided to take on another alias of the name... Wait, I lost it. Oh, no. Gordon Jensen. And then he proceeded to abandon this poor child in an RV park.
Aww.
In Scotts Valley, California. So she was probably like 5 years old at the time. And then he ended up getting arrested under another alias, which was Jerry Mockerman, in 1988 for driving a stolen vehicle. In 1989, he received a 3-year prison sentence for child abandonment, and under a plea deal, an additional charge of child abuse was dropped, and he was paroled in 1990.
Oh, wow.
So, this case is kind of a lot. I apologize. There's a lot of different names and information to, like, keep in mind.
And children.
Yeah. Yeah, this one is very rough. I apologize. So he resurfaced in December of 1999 under the alias Larry Vanner when the California-based chemist Yunsun, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Yunsun Jun, introduced him to her family. And the two were married in an unofficial ceremony in 2001. So she later then disappeared in June 2002, and her body was found buried in cat litter in their home after having died from blunt force trauma to the head.
Oh my gosh.
So he was arrested that November and pleaded no contest in 2003 to the charges related to her murder and her dismemberment. So he was sentenced to 15 years to life in jail. The guilty plea came as a surprise, and the Contra Costa County homicide detective, Roxanne Grunheide, has stated that she thinks he pleaded guilty over overhearing her say that she was going to request a paternity test for Lisa. A fingerprint match has confirmed that along with Vanner, he had previously used the aliases Jensen and Kimball, linking him to the child abandonment case in 2003. The San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department opened a case to find Lisa's biological father, and DNA evidence eventually found that he was not Lisa's father, and the case spent years without finding any significant developments. So he actually died while imprisoned in the High Desert State Prison on December 28th, 2010. So his cause of death was cancer, which was a combination of lung cancer, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and pneumonia.
Oh my gosh.
Whew.
That was a lot.
That was a lot, yes.
Well, just the injury there, too, all that he had. Oh.
Yeah. So the Bernardino detective Peter Headley got Lisa's case in 2013, and a genealogy website databases had grown since the case had started, aided by genetic genealogist Barbara Rayventer in 2015. Bowden's daughter had discovered her mother's identity and that the man that she had once thought to be her father was her kidnapper. So that's how they ended up finding out that she was kidnapped.
Oh, wow.
So this linked him to New Hampshire during the same time frame as the Bear Brooks murders, which was the murder of the four people, the woman and the three children, at the time that he was known as Robert Evans. In January 26, 2017, authorities publicly announced that Robert Evans was a suspect in the disappearance of Denise Bowden and the Bear Brooks murders. And additionally, they announced that DNA confirmed that he was the father of the middle child found in Allenstown, but that it was a pseudonym and his legal identity was not known. So police released a video of the police interview of Robert Evans in June 2017. In hopes of finding his true identity. And 2 months later, he was confirmed to be Terry Rasmussen, though why DNA testing from a DNA sample contributed by one of his children is what believed to be the first marriage. The use of genetic genealogy to identify Rasmussen represented the new possibilities in forensic investigations. So, this technique was also used to, very recently, in 2018, lead to the arrest of Joseph James DeAngelo as the Golden Gate Killer. Golden State Killer. Goodness gracious. In 2018. So, he was dubbed as the Chameleon Killer because of all of the different aliases in his crime spree, which stretched across the country. So, there are a couple other things that it is believed that he did, but it's not proven like the other things were. So, he lived about a mile and a half away from a 14-year-old Lorraine Ron when she disappeared from Manchester, New Hampshire in April 1980. Denise Denault was a 25-year-old woman who lived two blocks from the Ron residence, went missing in a bar of June 1980. And Denault had been living on the same street as Terry. So the police and FBI agents conducted a search in Manchester after receiving an anonymous tip regarding Denault in November 2017 after Terry was announced as the Bear Brook Killer. And a second search was conducted in May of 2018. By 2020, New Hampshire Senior Assistant Attorney General, that is the longest name. That is, like, such a long title. Like, good for him.
That was,
you know,
long.
He had to work for that, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
By 2020, New Hampshire Senior Assistant Attorney General Jeff Strelzin said that there was no evidentiary connection between Denault and Terry, but that the interest in his case had renewed attention to her disappearance. So another thing that is thought that he might have had to do with, but there's no evidence, was the disappearance of Elizabeth Lamotte, who was 17 years old whenever she had disappeared from the Youth Development Center in Manchester in 1984. So she had left the group home after receiving a furlough, so she was not reported missing until the police were seeking more information on Terry in 2017. At that time, the tipster speculated that she could have been Elizabeth Evans that had been listed as Terry's wife during his time in Manchester. However, DNA from her relatives later proved that she was one of the victims of the Redhead Murders, which was a series of unsolved homicides which are unrelated to Terry. And she ended up getting found in Tennessee 1985, so it was about 4 months after the disappearance. But because she lived so close to them, they kind of, you know, like, they were like, is this possible that this could have happened?
Oh, wow.
So Lisa was asked by interviewers in 1986 if she had any siblings, and she said that they died eating grass mushrooms when they were camping. So her answer led police to figure out that he had killed the siblings, too. Like, they were the siblings from before.
Okay.
So that seems like it was just a story that he told her.
That is so sad.
It really is. So it is speculated that he may have been responsible for killing San Joaquin County Jane Doe in 1995. So the unidentified woman's body was discovered by scavengers inside a refrigerator which had been dumped into a canal. So, like his other victims, she had died of blunt force trauma to the head. But we still don't know if that was him. That is... I spoke so fast.
Wait. Wow. Did you already go through all of it?
I went through all of my information, yeah.
That is so crazy.
I'm sorry that I said all of that so fast.
No, the story. I mean, yes, I guess that was pretty crazy too. No, but oh
my yeah. God. That one's really interesting, right?
It is. It truly is. Oh, but that is so sad. There's a lot of kids that were involved.
I know, and I feel so badly for the daughter that he kidnapped and then just was like, yeah, and your dad. Like, that's traumatizing and absolutely that's terrible.
So scary. Just think of, like, the stuff that's going through these kids' heads. Like, that... Oh, my God.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
That is so sad.
It really is.
You had a lot of information.
Yeah, and then I said it very quickly.
I know, but it was funny because, like, I also feel like we've been recording for a while. It was, like, a lot of information. It seems, like, extra long. But then you said, oh, you said it fast. So then I'm like, oh, well, I guess it was shorter.
Yeah, we've only been recording for 25 minutes.
I know, but for some reason, I don't know why. Maybe because we were having technical difficulties, but...
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is so scary.
It really is. Any cases in which they talk about someone, like, changing their identity and acting like someone else, it's, like, terrifying.
It's insane.
It's really insane
that is an actual idea that is going through people's heads in order to, like, get to people. Like, absolutely. That is so creepy.
It really is.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Emily, you always disturb me with your...
That's the goal.
True crime. Oh my gosh.
Well, the good news is you didn't turn into a robot the whole time.
That is very true. But we might be speaking too soon, because what if I turn into one while we're doing our outro? But
I'm a little bit scared.
Well, guys, we'll be sure to update y'all on Instagram and Twitter at
So Twitter is party_horror and Instagram is Horror Slumber Party Podcast.
See. And
thank you.
Please let us know what you think about this episode. Were you just as traumatized over the fact that people literally go out of their way in order to get close to someone to hurt them? Like,
I hope so.
So creepy. But yeah, give us your input at our email.
HorrorSlumberParty@gmail.com.
And also, guys, make sure y'all join our Patreon, because our last couple of episodes before this one that you're currently listening to were Patreon exclusives only. So
yes.
If you want to hear those, please, please join, because we want you to hear them too. They're interesting.
They are interesting. I agree.
So make sure you join our Patreon, and we hope y'all enjoyed this episode. Good night and scary dreams.
Bye.